AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860. As you know, we serve Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area of southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. I'm asking that you go and contact family members and friends on the phone through the email. If you did receive our email this morning, send it out to a family member or friend. This is how we get a growing family of supporters to really do their thing. And believe me, from what I'm seeing, everybody has been doing their part. As you know, we have a great panel of people who have been promoting, working together for the best interests of America and also American workers. I want to say a big thank you and welcome to Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, national small business advocate, Rich Loges, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and of course, Curtis Ellis, who is with the America First Project. And man, oh man, he has been in the news an awful lot these days, and we'll be discussing things with him. And our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, always very pleased to speak with you on the radio and through our other broadcasts here on 860, and also to meet the people in my travels. Well, I want to say just a few things before we go to our distinguished panel members. I want to remind all of you that this weekend begins the August edition of National Small Business Weekend, which is always the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of every month. That began simply by some of the local community people that supported our broadcast here throughout the 7 days that we are on 860, telling us that, you know, a lot of the stores are taking our business. They have parking lots. They have everything. So what we did, and they said, well, your national Saturday, you know, Small Business Saturday is great, but how about all of us little guys? So we came up with National Small Business Weekend, and it's really grown. I see that a lot of the communities and the stores are doing first Friday and first Saturday out, first Sunday afternoon. Some of the malls are doing things and local communities. That's what it's really all about. So kindly go out of your way to support your local businesses throughout the year, and also invite your family and friends to do the same, especially during National Small Business Weekend. And for more information, you can go right to our internet site, nationalsmallbusinessweekend.com. Well, today we're going to have another open forum day. But before we do, I just want to say one more thing. Last week, we talked a lot about common sense issues and how America and Americans must be our first obligation. This is the country where we live. This is the country where our children live, our grandchildren live, our family and friends and our neighbors. We have to take care of America first. People liked that theme, and the reaction was very good. And I want to say a special thank you to all the people that shared their thoughts with me in my travels, and I did quite a bit of them this week. And of course, for telling me that they tune into our broadcasts here on 860. After watching all the things that have been happening in America in the last few years, we all see firsthand that there is major differences at the cash register. People are taking the time to look at labels, making a decision for what they're going to buy. They're becoming more selective because they want to help American-made products move off the shelf. And remember, your purchase has a long-lasting effect on every part of the operation that we're doing to get American-made products back in circulation, get people talking about, hey, we got to support American-made first. We're trying to push local stores as well as the internet to feature more American-made. The internet has to also graduate to our level of thinking because they're out there to push the cheapest items. However, the cheapest items are not always American-made, and they're not always going to be sold on the internet as well. So we have to do a lot of pushing to get that going. So over the last 30 years, as we've been watching national elected leaders and all of their staff trying to penalize everybody for doing business in America, we saw the outcome as businesses left this country, left jobs behind and went elsewhere. And you see what's happened in our cities and in our businesses with all the factories. When you ride down the highways, you see some businesses that are now apartment buildings and things like that. They should have never been closed in the first place. There's plenty of room to live in beautiful dwellings. And it's just a matter of keeping America on the top of the burner. Well, as I said, today I want to hear from everybody. There are lots of things going on, lots of things happen. I understand that the president allowed Canadian drugs to now be sold in America under the guidance of the Food and Drug Administration, which is very good. You could have done mail order stuff in the past, but now it will be a little better to get competition moving because, you know, there's been too much of a structure in America to keep all the control here by keeping, you know, no competition in this situation. First, I'd like to turn to a gentleman I know that has a lot to say. I'm going to ask Rich Loges to give us his opening. And what's new, Rich?
How you doing, guys? Good morning to our listeners. And let me. I should have apologized in advance, so I'll apologize after the fact for my tweet storm last night. If your phones were blowing up,
They were.
Twas I. And yeah. So I guess where to begin, Michael? You know where to begin. Well, I actually am going to quote. So John Delaney last night was in the debate, and I know who he is. He was a congressman. He was actually the first Democrat to declare, and I thought Delaney. And I listened to some of the post-game interviews. I heard a lot of his comments, his remarks, Michael, were centered on a lot of fairy tale promises that can't be made. And I guess there's an interesting I guess the two sides that were created last night, it was somewhat there the first debate, but there's essentially two sides that were created, and those are the sides represented by Delaney, whom I don't agree with a lot of his politics, but Delaney is, I think he's slightly more centered in reality, and then you've got the side of Elizabeth Warren. And there was a moment last night in the debate, if you guys picked up on it, if you noticed it, where Elizabeth Warren said, why run for president to tell us what it is you can't do, right? And so you've got her side, which is, Brenwine Bernard Sanders said this last night. So, Henry, please, I need you to hear this out, because Henry's our great audio engineer is a swing voter in a swing state. We need him for 2020 in Pennsylvania.
Again with this?
We need Henry on board for this, so we're going to earn his vote as a swing voter. You know, you heard a lot of you heard a lot about transformation last night, and you heard a lot about revolution. And you have to ask yourself, to whom does that appeal, Larkin? Right? Who really the revolution? Who does that appeal to? Right? Who does transformation appeal to? And so, I think that when you look at the line drawn last night, Michael, you've got the Warren side, and you've got the Delaney side. And then after all was said and done, I was listening to David Axelrod. For those who don't know who David Axelrod is, he was President Obama's campaign manager. And I don't know the man, although I take that his cordiality and his low-key personality, that it's all genuine. But no one should mistake the the low-key temperament of David Axelrod. David Axelrod is a political killer, and he's one of the few Dem analysts I really listen intently to, because he orchestrated at the time what was the greatest campaign we'd ever seen in politics up to that point, Axelrod. And Axelrod had a point afterwards, and he said, well, but the challenge, he was talking about the challenge that people like Warren have. He said, but the challenge is you also are running for a national office, and you've got to take into account what so many people around the country actually want. And Axelrod openly asked the question. The question is, do the majority of people in the majority of states, my words, do the majority of people in the majority of states want a plan that Elizabeth Warren would put forth? And Michael, my takeaway from it is essentially the same as the first time, which is that there are basically three main goals, three main plans: take our children, take our money, take our freedoms. And the entire state, like all night, from the healthcare discussion to the firearms discussion, it was just, I felt like, to quote Yogi Berra, it was sort of deja vu all over again. I felt like we were listening to a 2016 debate with the talking points. They're regurgitated. And you hear a lot about race and racism now, which was always a go-to in the past for the Dem playbook. But now you hear it on everything. Now it's even seeped into environmentalism. You've got Kamala Harris using phrases such as environmental racism. And the reason I believe, Michael, that they're using it on every discussion, every debate now, is because I think the Democrats, I think the smarter ones know, like I think David Axelrod knows, that the majority of people in the majority of states do not want what's mostly sold on that stage. So, you know, look, Mark, my final point is this. The Dems are playing with house money right now. You know, Michael, they're playing with house money. They can roll the dice on a fundamental transformation type campaign. Doesn't matter who loses, because Democrats will still always go to see their loser candidates. I mean, people just recently went to see Walter Mondale, right? So I mean, there's a zero risk, only upside for this campaign. So that was my, I've got a lot more to say, but that was my takeaway from last night.
You know, Rich, my big question after watching 80% of it yesterday, I had something going on after that, so I had to step away. But my big question is, what was really discussed by these people? They had the perfect opportunity to talk about, what are we going to do to bring more businesses back to America? Anybody can talk about taxing somebody. The rich people. The rich people, if they got rich, that means they ran their businesses well. If the middle class is employed and they're getting money, why should they be additionally taxed?
By the way, one more thing.
They're talking about a healthcare system. I've been asking people, and most people have been asking people, the hospital systems, the doctors have all been asking, where is a written plan that we can discuss? Talk is cheap. It's all breath.
Well, Elizabeth Warren, last night, there was a moment where she did talk about American workers, blue-collar workers.
But the big question is, what made businesses want to leave America, to escape America? It was rising taxes and regulations.
The worker discussion, correct. That's right, amongst others, right? But that's right. So the American worker discussion, Elizabeth Warren did bring it up. But it's a lot of one step forward, three steps back, because complimentary. So Sanders last night said, during the debate and afterwards, that he's the most pro-union, perhaps the most pro-union senator in the United States. Someone on Sanders' campaign staff needs to tell him that voluntary union membership has plummeted in the last half century, Michael.
Right.
And the reason it's plummeted is because as soon as workers were able to keep more of their money, they did. So to say you're pro-union, that's sort of, so much for progressive, right? That's sort of 1930s way of thinking. So you could say you're pro-worker, but then you come back with, you know, middle-class taxes and union and voluntary union dues have significantly decreased over the years, Michael. So,
right. But
again, back to David Axelrod. You know, what are you selling compared to what is enough to get you to win the election? And Amy Klobuchar last night had that remark also. right, she pointed out, is it about basically pie-in-the-sky promises, or is it about winning an election? So you could see there's all this. It's really delicious to watch, Larkin. It's all over the place, right? And, you know, on our side, Michael, build a wall, originalist judges, lower taxes, nationalism, let's bring the jobs back, let's keep the jobs here, right? Let's make sure our allies pay. You know, let's call out truths when we see them, however uncomfortable they are. Let's try to ground it in reality. Our side's very clear on our right. So we're gonna have a clash of, you know, do you want to keep going in the direction we're going in? We got work to do, or do you want fundamental transformation again?
Rich, right? I want to say, I watched that debate, and I saw a lot of talk. I saw few facts, few figures, few solutions, and nothing documented. And that's what I think, since it's in the early process of the campaign, I think those things should be demanded upon these candidates. Facts, figures, solutions, and documented solutions. We talked and talked. They talk. I mean, if this, you know what's going to happen? People are just going to tune out because there's nothing they can look at. In today's technology, you can go right to the internet and look at a person's plan. It's great that they were up there. It means nothing. Who allowed, they discuss items like, who allowed America's major cities to fall into disrepair? Who allowed America's schools to drop so many classes to help America's students to be ready for the workforce and students to be ready for a job upon graduation? Who did that? Of course, it was the national leaders. Did you do it, Rich? Did Larkin do it? Did Curtis do it? Did Mark do it? Absolutely not. It was these people who were paid to go to Washington to do this. Has hurt our workers, took jobs out of this country, worked on treaties that killed this country. It's got to stop. This type of a dog and pony show, remember, as I said, 3 or 4 weeks ago, this is going to come down to one person, and maybe an independent. That's it. Let them talk all they want. If they had to document the stuff they were discussing yesterday, none of them would want to be on the stage. I want to turn now because Mark has a commitment today. Mark Andel, did you watch that debate? And how is our American workers doing in your eyes?
I did not watch the debate because I was celebrating my mother's 82nd birthday, Mike, but...
God bless her. Tell her I said the very best and tell her Stolat.
Will do. So my dad and mom are 82 now. grew up in a different time for sure. But no, you know, I heard a lot about it. I've got a lot going on here. It's bus season, Mike. A lot of buses coming up. You know, Americans, Made in America Matters. It's more alive now than ever. Just from these 6 buses I did in the last 4 days, from all over the country, just listening to them and hearing, it's so opposite what you hear on the news that we watch. There's a lot of happy people. There's a lot of good going on. We're getting ready for the biggest shows we do of the year, Mike, being the Eden Corn Festival up here, but the Erie County Fair, which is the second largest county fair in the country, that starts next Wednesday. So it's a heyday for my team. You know, this is when we really plug, but we push Made in America at this big fair. There's a million people that come through in 12 days, but our store, they tie us with the New York State Lottery building, and you know, you really get a lot of feedback, Mike. I'll be giving you a lot more next Wednesday, but the Made in America movement is very alive and well. Again, we're up to 9,000 products and support 500 privately owned American businesses. And I tell every bus that, and they can't believe a publicly traded company doesn't make one item I can sell in the United States. And that's really amazing, Mike, over 9 years. There's not one item I sell that's a publicly traded company.
Very nice.
Because you're slaves to it.
Because you are helping local businesses. You are helping the mom and pops who grew up, who worked hard, who tried to educate their children. And I mean worked hard. That's all I hear everywhere I go. The people are tired of all this rigmarole, this mudslinging. I'm, in fact, recommending that there be an exorcist hired to talk to some of these people to see what can be done to wise them up. I want those facts, figures, solutions, and I want them documented.
We want people talking about learning and earning. You know, Larkin, we talk about it a lot, and that's what we want to do, supporting these skilled trades, supporting entrepreneurs, inventors. On my other show, Mike, I had a great guy out of Chicago that makes, it's called the gutter wedge and whatnot, but he's an injection mold guy, and he's taking recycled plastic from hospitals, melting it down in his factory, and producing a product made in America with it with 22 employees. Hats off. There's so much going on that should be exposed, but people earning a living, and that's what should be talked about more. Making American products is not only cool, fun, but it's rewarding, and it needs to be done. Any good economy needs 50-50 fair trade and to be producing in their own country.
You know, Mark, yesterday, the 80% of the debate I watched, no one said how they're going to bring jobs back, how people are going to earn, how our children and grandchildren are not going to be stuck with the $22 trillion debt that rises every day because of the interest on it. Who's going to pay those bad debts? Who's going to pay all this back? They're going to give this away for free, that away for free. Yet no plan is really documented. And if the plan is documented, when these people from these campaigns call me, I say, email me the plan of action. I never get anything.
And with President Trump attacking the unfair fair trade acts is how you grow jobs in the United States of America. And that China number one, since the beginning 9 years ago, I was attacking China. I lost half my business to China. My shirt, because China's a long drive to work, everything he is doing is going to grow this country.
Absolutely. And you know, Curtis, I want you to join us because I received something from you and I shared it with some of my contacts about how China would like to delay getting a deal. Hopefully there will be a new president. Curtis, tell us about that.
Yes, and in fact, there's now a story on the front page of the Wall Street Journal confirming that China is delaying. They're slow walking these talks. Right now, our negotiating team is in Shanghai for the 12th round of talks on this trade deal. Before they left, President Trump said he doesn't care if we don't get a deal with China, and he shouldn't because we're in the catbird seat here. Our economy continues to be strong, and it'll get stronger as expected. The Fed lowers interest rates today. Unemployment's low, wages are rising, job openings exceed the trained people that can fill those jobs. So we're in a good position. China's economy is slowing. Now, China believes that it can outweigh us, and if President Trump is replaced by a Democrat next year, they will get a better deal from the Democrats. And based on the performance we saw last night on the debate stage, they're probably right, because we saw Steve Bullock, the Montana governor, decrying Trump's trade wars, calling it Trump's trade war. He seems to be oblivious to the fact that it's China's trade war. They've been waging it for 30 years. But he's in the never Trump mode, and he blames President Trump for the trade problem. Tom Steyer, the billionaire hedge fund guy who wants to impeach Trump, he has a commercial on TV talking about Trump's trade wars and how it's hurting Americans. No, it's China trade wars that has absolutely destroyed the lives of millions of Americans and literally killed tens of thousands of Americans through alcoholism, drug addiction, and
depression.
The other,
depression by not having a job, not being able to support your children, not being able to pay your bills. This is another aftermath of what took place as of taking the jobs out of this country.
Exactly right. And the Democrats seem oblivious to this. I won't even talk about John Delaney. He is such an unsympathetic, unappealing character. He wants the TPP back. Well, good luck with that. That's never going to happen.
Well, that I did hear. I mean, I almost had a heart attack when I heard that. I thought to myself, my God, have mercy. You know, when I said that, I thought, Curtis, you better start your exploratory committee for president. I know Larkin Conley. We laughed about that for a few weeks. But Larkin, I'm urging you to start an exploratory committee. Why can't you ask for $250 and $500 donations?
Exactly. Well, let me just finish on this topic here. So China thinks it can outweigh, outlast, outplay, and outmaneuver President Trump. And get a better deal from Democrats. A lot of those Democrats on stage last night led them to believe that. Chuck Schumer, though, is still saying hang tough, telling the president to stay tough. What's interesting is that we have a fifth column within the United States. China has allies in the U.S. corporate media and on Wall Street that are pushing for China's side in this confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
The Wall Street banks make money by listing Chinese companies on American stock exchanges. They have invested in Chinese companies. There are these passive index funds, exchange-traded funds, which are invested heavily in Chinese companies. We can't even look at the books of Chinese companies. Beijing calls them state secrets. So we don't even know if these companies are rife with fraud. You've got the New York State and the California State pension funds invested in Chinese companies. I mean, this is insane. Marco Rubio wants to undo that. He has introduced legislation saying if these companies don't open their books so American regulators can see if they're on the up and up, they can't be listed on the American exchange. And you've got the Wall Street banks make money that way on the transaction fees every time they invest your money in a Chinese company. And they also make money by sucking capital into the United States to neutralize the trade deficit. So the higher the trade deficit is, the more money these banks make by bringing in foreign capital. So they have a vested interest in us running a huge trade deficit with China. So they are naturally lobbying for China's behalf. People like Henry Paulson, former Treasury Secretary under George W. Bush, he's a huge China advocate. And then you have the corporate media. I've seen just in the last 3 days, I've seen three stories where China is pushing this line that opposing China is somehow racist. There we go again. You can't criticize any sitting member of Congress who's non-white without being a racist. Now you can't criticize China without being racist. The New York Times, The Washington Post, and Politico have all quoted people in their stories, in their news columns, talking about how that they're afraid the Chinese are being discriminated against because of they're being charged with espionage and things because of racism. And this anti-immigration and xenophobia in America is leading to this singling out of Chinese Americans, and it's very hurtful. Well, in fact, folks, there are Chinese spies in America, okay? It has nothing to do. If they were German, they would be German spies. And in eras past, that's what happened. If it was South Americans or if it was Europeans that were spying on America, we'd be arresting Europeans. If it was Russians, who happened to be as Caucasian as any other Caucasians, it would be Russians that would be arrested for spying. It has nothing to do with race. But the media dutifully repeats these talking points. We know from the Chinese Communist Party mouthpiece, Global Times, that this charge of racism is something that the Beijing propagandists are pushing. So I'm kind of wandering all over the place here. But
Curtis, I want to ask you a big question. You mentioned that we have so many lobbyists promoting China and other countries in Washington. How many lobbyists do you know that are promoting American companies, American-made?
Well, you know, and that's such a good point, Michael, because we have very few. We have very few. During the campaign, I was having discussions with the idea of let's have an American desk at the State Department. At the State Department, you've got the European desk, the Asian desk, the African desk, and these people staffing these desks inevitably end up advocating for the interests of the Europeans, the Asians, and the Africans. And we said, the Trump campaign said, we need an American desk advocating for America and Americans, what's good for us. and there are too few. Last night there was an interesting dichotomy, that the interesting thing came up in the debate that I wanted to point out, because it underscores something that you just said now and you said earlier, Michael and Mark. The mom and pops, the mom and pop businesses, who's advocating for them? Right now, we have so many lobbyists, and so much of the Washington establishment has become enthralled to the multinational corporations. Elizabeth Warren said, we have been looking out for, and I believe Marianne Williamson said this too, and she was making a lot of sense last night, and that's pretty scary. But when, when those two are the ones making sense, you know the party's gone off the deep end. And they said, we have been looking out for these the profitability of these multinational corporations instead of what's good for America. And I believe the big divide right now, and the other thing that Warren said, is these multinational corporations don't care a whit about what's good for America. If they can lay off all the Americans and save 5 cents by moving to China, they'll be there in a hot minute. And that is so true. And it's the mom-and-pop stores, the small businesses. These are the people who've been standing up for America, that make America strong, that make America great. And the divide right now is between these global corporations that don't care about our country and the small businesses, the mom-and-pops that have been, that do care about America and that employ Americans. And that's what we have to keep in focus here.
Well, you know, Curtis, lobbyist row in Washington, it's very sad to see all these countries represented, but nobody there for America. Isn't that weird? Yet we have 535 people elected sitting there, and not one of them is there talking about America, America's businesses, and American workers. People are saying, well, the union representation has dropped in recent years. That's true, because if jobs left the country, then there are less people to encourage to be part of the union. That's one factor. Secondly, I believe that the unions were always supposed to be there to ensure perfection. If we're not having perfection, we're saying, well, it's cheaper, and no matter how it comes from China, we'll accept it because we'll save 20 cents or 50 cents on the item. This is what, this kind of thinking is what drove America to where it is. Every one of the leaders in Washington should be given a report card, a public report card on the internet, where we show them who their name, who they represent, what they've promoted, where they stand on American workers, what they are looking to do in the future, not stand before their constituents telling them what they're going to give them for free. America has $22 trillion worth of debt as a result of people with that type of thinking. Our children, our grandchildren are going to have to pay that bill. They're stuck with debts they don't want and they don't need. So that's why I beg people to support American workers, support America's stores. Henry's sitting here. He's got 4 kids. Steve has 2 kids. I have 2 kids, my grandkids. They're stuck with this bill. It's now $68,000 per person in the United States. Go and look on the debt clock. And yet they spoke, not in the past debates, nor the debate yesterday. What are we going to do to lower our debt? How are we going to cut our prices? Today, when I heard we're going to allow drugs from Canada, I thought, wow, that will have America's drug dealers and drug suppliers thinking, wow, we better be more transparent about what our costs are. When I ask drug companies to advertise here and there, oh, we have no money. Yet they're making big profits, but they don't want to advertise. Now that we do have a president in the White House who's asking questions, the people in the media, the people in big government offices don't like it because they weren't asking the questions for 10, 15, 20 years. And now that some non-politician enters, all of a sudden it's a sin. Get the exorcist out so that we can have somebody come in. I mean, what kind of nonsense is this? I think that what we talk about on this program is more sensible than all that was heard by me yesterday, watching 80% of the debate. Quite frankly, I was in amazement. There was nothing about what are we going to do to earn a dollar to be able to pay a dollar. Money does not fall from the sky. We don't walk with bushel baskets on the street. It's work. And work, a four-letter word, is not a bad word. W-O-R-K. That's what gives people confidence. That's what people feel that they're able to go out and raise their families, pay their bills, not look to government to be their God, their mother, their father, their sister, their brother. Well, the debate riled me up some yesterday. But the fact is, no one's speaking about American workers in any big thing. Well, the workers, we're going to give this, we're going to give that. That makes us look like all we're going to do is work for them to take money. If you're a successful business, you are punished. Because you're successful, you'll be taxed more. If you're a little guy, well, then you'll either have to pay your little taxes or beg government for assistance. Do you agree with that, Rich?
Preach, Michael. Preach. Preach. I'm telling you. You know, look, it's when you're one of the front runners, expect the slings and arrows. So let me sling an arrow at Senator Sanders. So I'm saying this in a broadly speaking, defined way, Michael. The best way for oneself to lift oneself's status economically is working, right? Is working. Working, making money, pursuing opportunities, all of that together. Senator Sanders has told workers on his staff who want to work, but they're salaried. So to keep their work time at $15 an hour, he's told those staffers who want to work, go home. Does that make a lot of sense?
Yeah, because I'll need you to participate with me at some public event. So go home now, rest up so you don't go over your hours.
Let's just call it for what it is. How is it that Sanders and Warren and these people, right? They talk about workers, and you have workers. Senator Sanders unionized his workers. Now they're starting, it's not a mass exodus, but now they're starting to leave. And the reason they're starting to leave is because what they have, according to the reports I've read, where they've written to his campaign managers, they're starting to leave because they've said, wait a minute, if we're going to try to sell this for the country, we don't do it ourselves. Now, Michael, look, everybody to some extent, let's be honest about it, everybody to some extent is a hypocrite about something, right? Somewhere along in our lives. Human beings are flawed. But I keep coming back to this point, Michael. My wife hates when I keep bringing it up, but I forgive the repetition. Do these people on the stage actually believe the stuff coming out of their mouths? Do they really believe? I mean, in the year 2019, Michael, on that stage last night, we were talking about slavery reparations. Now, look, if you're a Democrat and you want slavery reparations, start a nonprofit. The tax laws are very favorable for nonprofits. Start a nonprofit, solicit contributions, then hire a staff to then go and grant and offer financial reparations to descendants of slavery. What I just said, Michael, you could start that in a day.
Now, Rich, I'm going to bring something. I'm going to bring something up.
But why don't they do that?
They don't.
The reason they don't do that.
They don't believe it themselves.
it always comes back to three goals: take our kids, take our money, take our freedoms.
Now, before I go to Larkin Connolly, I want to just say, Larkin, I like the idea of you setting up that exploratory committee. I would like to ask everybody to promote that. And Larkin, I think that in your years of experience, you can agree with me that American workers who were displaced by greed of companies who left the country to escape taxes and, of course, also regulations should be given reparations first, because those are the people that were hurt. They lost their jobs. They lost their job skills. They had their families broken apart by not able to afford what they really wanted and needed. They should be given reparation. Why weren't they talking about that yesterday? Yes, Larkin.
Well, good morning, everybody. I happen to be in Palatka, Florida, in the county seat of Putnam County, and I'm in their commissioner's hearing room, and I happen to be sitting in the chair the seat president of the Putnam County Commission sits in, and I almost feel empowered. Pretty comfortable chair here.
President Larkin Connolly.
Listen, we gotta kill that. I don't have enough energy, and there isn't enough vodka for me.
Wait, Larkin, at least set up an exploratory committee. I could get all American workers that want you to be a candidate to give some donation. I mean, they're all talking about these groundswell of people. I think American workers would go for you. You've been in business. You've been in education. You've been in helping people open businesses. You're the perfect candidate.
And let me tell you about one of my old jobs. First of all, I feel like I'm sitting in a room full of whirligigs, and a 10-mile-an-hour breeze just came through, and everything's spinning. I've never heard this show talk about so many different subjects in one 30-minute segment in my entire life. Good Lord. Let me make a couple comments. First of all, I think it is an incumbent upon us to understand the campaign process. Now, granted, I've been the campaign manager, assistant campaign manager on a city council seat, one, been the campaign manager for two senatorial runs, and lost both of those. But what I can tell you that I did come away with is an acute understanding of the campaign process. You're watching 20 people talk, and by the way, huge props, and I never thought I'd say this as long as I live, huge props to CNN for the way they controlled that debate. It was absolutely probably one of the finest debates from a journalist's viewpoint that I've seen in a very, very long time. I mean, they controlled the floor. They asked for comments. And what they received without any specificity was, and the specificity doesn't come, gentlemen, for another year. These politicians are throwing you-know-what against the wall to see what'll stick. There's no specificity. They're just talking about stuff so people will applaud. They didn't applaud a plan because there was no plan. They applauded, oh, let's do reparations. That sounds great. Yeah. We need to kill all the big corporations that have ruined this country. Yeah. And that's what you're going to get. And tonight you're going to get more of the same. But the only thing interesting tonight is that you'll get a chance to watch Joe Biden, who I love, always have, talk, and probably after a week or two of just heavy drilling, be a little bit more controlled on what he said. But let me, and I'll tell you what's funny about all of this, is you talk about urban cities and the fact that the government and nobody's doing anything for them. Imagine how bad people who live in urban communities feel when they don't see their leaders, when they don't see their politicians for 4 years, and then all of a sudden they show up walking up and down the street doing selfies and shaking hands and promising the electorate the world. they go 3 years without seeing them, and then all of a sudden 1 year comes, and it's election year, and bam. Everybody's everybody's friend, and everybody's trying to extend the promise and gain the vote. And one last comment, and this is for Curtis. Curtis, this is insult to injury, and I'm sure that you probably know a little bit about this. But one of my favorite politicians and a man who I think is the future of the Republican Party, his name is Rick Scott. He eliminated a guy who had been senator for as long as we had orange trees in Florida because he debated them, and poor Senator Nelson couldn't come up with two monosyllabic words to string together, and he got his butt kicked in a very close election. But Rick Scott, Curtis, this is for you. Wanted to know. He met the other day with Jody Olson, who is the director of the Peace Corps, and he asked Jody why he wanted to know why the Peace Corps is spending millions of U.S. dollars annually in China, and that why we send dozens of volunteers to work on projects that Beijing itself should be able to pay for with their own resources. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Larkin, you are absolutely right.
This is the height of stupidity. But that's my buddy Rick Scott, the guy, the last governor of this state who ran the state that's free, and he called on the Senate and the House to get together jointly, and he said, I'll share with you how we ran a state as vibrant as Florida, and we ran it without spending more than we took in. He said, when the checkbook got empty, we stopped writing checks. There was a tax increase. Who gives a damn about tax increase? It doesn't make any difference to the people in Congress and Senate. They don't care. It's like my 6-year-old granddaughter said, take me for a Happy Meal, and I said, I don't have any money. And she said, well, that's easy. Go to the bank and get some. And that's exactly the way the senators and congressmen are. They don't worry about your taxes. Taxes aren't an issue.
Right.
They spend the money no matter what. They don't give a damn. They
raise the debt ceiling and just let's party as always. There is no reality check on any of it.
So, Curtis, that's my insult to injury comment for you.
I love it. Larkin, I love it. And
what the Peace Corps is doing, propping up our adversary with U.S. tax dollars.
You know what, Curtis and Rich and Mark and everybody else, I'd like to see 50% of those Peace Corps volunteers return to America and let them go into some of the cities that really need some help getting the people together.
Well, yeah, look, Senator Scott has introduced legislation to pull the Peace Corps out of China. Now, I understand Bernie Sanders is going to introduce legislation to send the Peace Corps to Baltimore because he's on the record saying Baltimore looks like a third world country. So he should be calling for the Peace Corps to go to Baltimore. But if rationality ruled politics, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. In addition to the Peace Corps operating in China, the World Bank makes loans to China, right? U.S. tax dollars go into the World Bank, and the World Bank then makes development grants and loans to China, inside China, to build up our adversary. But luckily, President Trump's guy running the World Bank, David Malpass, wants to bring that to an end, too. It is absolutely ridiculous, but yeah.
At least, Curtis, we are now seeing things put on the table that we never saw before. It was the old Wizard of Oz idea for years and years. Now the curtain's open, and we're starting to see stuff that has opened the eyes of the American people. And they ask questions like, who allowed that to pass in the first place? Who the hell allowed that? Who allowed, by the way, and a more honest question is, who allowed any major city in America to go into disrepair? What congressman, what senator allowed that to happen? How can they go campaign in places where the...
I think I know what Larkin's going to say here, but and I don't want to speak for Larkin, Michael, but I sent you guys today, I've actually got a brand new article I published. It'll be at my site, theritzlogishow.com, on my social media, everywhere. And the headline, the title of the article is Baltimore is Worse Than Trump Thinks. And certainly Elijah Cummings has some culpability. Certainly there are bipartisan reasons, actually, for some of the decline in our cities. But just look at it like a company. I mean, Larkin has been around business his entire life. When a company is failing, do you, and you ask them, why is the company failing? Do you say, red state? Okay. What else? Congress. Don't you think you should look at the people running the company, Michael?
That's right.
When you look at the people who have run our city, it's not dominance. It's like dictator dominance. The Democrats have run the city of Baltimore for longer than Stalin ran the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
Yep, 19,000, almost 20,000 continuous days. 20,000 continuous days.
Can you imagine? I mean,
now, I would like to make a suggestion. We've talked about the city of Baltimore. There are many, many other cities in the United States.
Many others. And you're in
that
one
have
now,
gone
Michael, FYI.
Through absolute one. Hell. I'd like to make a suggestion that all elected leaders start looking around their own front door to see what is going on. How are their constituents being treated?
They know what's going on. They know what's going on. You don't think Elijah Cummings doesn't know what's going on in Baltimore?
Wait a second, guys.
Dude, we not think, come on, Michael.
You have forgotten a very important fact. Not the last one. Not the second to the last one. Not the last three. The last three mayors have been thrown out of office, have resigned in disgrace over economic issues. Can you imagine? The last three mayors.
You're right, Larkin. But here is the question. A lot of the dollars that are given to the major cities come from the federal government. That simply means that the congressmen and the senators are not doing their job to see if the federal dollars are being well spent. Who allowed those major cities to go down the drain? You or I or the people in Washington? Who allowed the schools to drop all the classes, the trade programs that would allow people to have a trade and a future?
We got to stop asking these questions.
What the people want to know. Who allowed it and why wasn't it brought up for all these years? We're complaining that the cities are in decline and decay. The water systems are all broken up. Why the hell hasn't the infrastructure been fixed for years?
Nobody in this country has come to the realization that Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, Chicago, Flint, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, all have one thing in common. Does anybody know what it is?
Tens of thousands of consecutive days run by the same party, the party of Joe Biden and Elizabeth.
Okay, that's fine. But they're all broke. They all can't fund their own pensions. Yep. San Francisco is so broke it can't pay attention. Of these major metropolitan areas are in very, very serious economic trouble. Period. Amen.
Now, I agree with that, Larkin, but there's one thing that has to be brought to the attention of the people, and that is if the party is in control, controlling for 30 years, 50 years, the opposition party should be bringing attention to the fact that all these things are wrong. Buy ads in papers. Buy television ads. Bring it to the attention. Don't just sit there and say, we're the minority party. You know?
No, I'm telling you, if the Lord himself, if Jesus Christ ran for office in Philadelphia as a Republican, he'd get swamped. He'd get clobbered. He wouldn't stand a chance.
Well, I agree. I understand that. I understand that. But the people...
Now's our chance.
Now is a chance of chances.
Now I said in the article that now is the chance. The Republican Party in these cities, right, for the most part, have avoided bringing... They've avoided campaigning. They've got the city of Philadelphia, I believe it goes back to the 50s. And look, I love Philly. People listening now think I'm trashing this. I love Philadelphia, Michael. I love coming in. And if you eat cheesesteaks without onions, go to the next table. You got to have
Philadelphia is a wonderful city. It's a great city.
It's world history.
World history. It was the center, the industrial center of the world at one time. What happened?
Back to the '50s, Michael. That you've got to have in your city charter, two Republicans.
Right.
If you didn't have that charter, you guys would just be Baltimore to the north.
I want a charter that has no onions.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear.
Henry's a swing voter.
I hope many swing voters are getting the idea that we are making a major change in this country. I have never heard tourists coming in. I've never heard people talking about it. When I go around, they stop me and say, thanks, don't let this message die. Don't allow people to just continue to walk all over us. It's time for us to stand up and be heard as the American people. We salute one flag. We have one blood. Let's do it. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, my thanks to Lark and Rich, Curtis, to Mark, to Henry, to everybody. Thank you all. God bless you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.